He would say something, and she would say something, and before either of them knew it, they would be playing out a dialogue so familiar that it drained the imagination, blocked the will, allowed them to drop words and whole sentences and still arrive at the cold conclusion. Joan Didion, Play It As It Lays. Hello, I'm Kennedy Weibel.
And I'm Rebecca Capone.
And this is Reading Pop Classics, the podcast where we read and discuss current era classics, books that had a major cultural impact and whose resonance is still felt today. This episode, we are discussing Joan Didion's 1970 novel, Play It As It Lays. So this was Didion's second novel. Her first one was called River Run. This one was written, I believe, before she was married to John Donne. I think they met over the editing of this novel, as I saw in my research. Didion is known, I think, probably most famously for her essays, for her new journalism work. She's put in with the likes of Tom Wolfe, and Gay Talese, and I'll say Hunter Thompson. I think he earned the name check. Her essays are probably the thing that's the most famous, most well-known of her work. The collections Slouching Toward Bethlehem and The White Album in particular. And then a little bit later in her life, tragically, The Year of Magical Thinking, the book that she wrote when her husband John Donne died, and the sad follow-up to it, Blue Nights, when her daughter died. Both, unfortunately for her, nonfiction. But this one, Play It As It Lays, is the novel that she is the most well known for, her best known piece of fiction. It was well received as soon as it came out. There's a movie that her and John Donne wrote together as well. They wrote the screenplay. And this book shows up on a lot of top 100 books of the century lists and is cited by a lot of people as a major influence, notably for us, Bret Easton Ellis, who pretty much based Less Than Zero on it. Almost beat for beat. Start us off, Rebecca, and tell us if this book passes the Bechdel test.
Yes, Play It As It Lays does pass the Bechdel test. We see conversations between Mariah, our main character, and Helene, so like a friend of her and her husband's. We see conversations between Mariah, Helene, and Helene's mother-in-law, Carlotta, and they do talk about things outside of their respective men and their lives. So this did handily pass the Bechdel test.
That's a good success ratio too, considering there's not very many people in this book.
It's true. Yeah, there really aren't a lot. There are not a ton of other players. We are kind of talking about the same. Mariah, rather, is interacting with sort of the same handful of people throughout the book, and a lot of them are men.
There's maybe 12, na I didn't count, maybe 12 named characters in this. I would go as high as 15, maybe 15 total. I don't think there's
Maybe.
15, but
Maybe 15.
yeah.
Yeah, and not and I mean I think the only other two women that we sort of regularly hear about throughout the book are Helene and Carlotta.
And it's interesting this one passes because this book is very much about relationships. Well, it's about several things, but one of the things it is definitely about is relationships. Mariah has a relationship with her first husband, Ivan Costello.
Were they married? Or
She was
he's an
married.
ex-lover, Ivan.
I thought she was married. I think she's married to Ivan.
Possibly.
We can Google that. But there's Ivan Costello. There's her relationship with Carter. There's her relationship with BZ, BZ's relationship with Helene, Mariah's relationship with Lev Grossman. Like, it's a book about couples or about coupling or throupling in a few instances, I believe. So the fact that that is a major focus of the book and it still manages to skate by on the Bechdel test is a good hookup ratio.
It is, and I think it also speaks to, something that we see in this book in terms of relationship is Mariah's relationship. So I want to say her relationship with men, and not the romantic relationship she's having with men, but the way that men in this book influence her life and influence decisions that she makes, and influence, I think, a little bit of like the course of her life that I think is really interesting. And I think that is something that we see because this is a book that is written about the 60s, when we were having more of this like. maybe starting this wave of feminism, you know, of like feminism, but like she is in a position where like her husband's making a lot of decisions for her. You know, men are often kind of like dismissive of her, and then particularly because she's suffering from depression and like nihilism, I feel like they're even a little bit more dismissive.
That's true. Even the title, Played as It Lays, comes from something her father said to her and the way he kind of instructed her in growing up. And now that you mention it, when she flashes back to like her life when she was younger, while her mother is there, her father is the predominant character that she is talking about, and his friend Benny Austin is the other predominant character, and these two men and the way their gambling, their lifestyle dictated the life and all of the moves and all of the things that they had and lost, went like where they went and the reasons they had to get there. At one point, her father loses the house and remembers in a card game, I think, and remembers that in another card game or another game of chance, whatever gambling, he had won a town called Silver Wells, which is how they end up there. All the way down to when her mother dies. She doesn't find out until her father sends her a letter, and she doesn't even find out in the letter till the second paragraph. Like the information is, he's not withholding it necessarily to be mean, but the men dictate everything in her life, including like how she even finds out she doesn't have a mother anymore.
Yes, exactly.
And then whether or not she gets roles, whether or not she works in television or movies, really whether she goes to parties, who takes her to the parties.
And who takes her to the parties, whether or not she attends them. Carter kind of forces her, like towards the end of the novel, he kind of forces her to come out into the desert to like ostensibly keep an eye on her, I guess, because like they're estranged. Like we do see that they get divorced, but he is still influential in her life, right? He still kind of keeps like popping up. And it's not necessarily because he cares about her, it's because her breakdown is making him look bad. It's
And
embarrassing because
that's
people know
true.
that it's happening. So he kind of forces her to come out. You know, to kind of keep an eye on her, to have her around like BZ and Helene, because the, you know, these are our friends that are also kind of aware of the breakdown. But again, it doesn't come from this place of caring about her and caring about the fact that she is going through something.
To be fair, he's not doing anything about why she feels bad. I certainly agree with that. I will say that by the time we get to that part of the novel, it is clear to us as the reader that Mariah needs someone. You can't leave her alone. Someone needs to be looking out for her. She should be with other adults. She's not doing good.
No, she's not. I mean, that is fair. But I guess, like I said, kind
You're
of
right.
this point of like,
Carter is not helping. He's not like trying to, nothing about his own behavior is like making her feel better or helping her find a way to recover from whatever it is that ails her, but she should go to the desert with him. She shouldn't be home alone. She's
no, she shouldn't.
not doing great.
But the men in her life are irritated with her for having these problems, and nobody's caring enough, and Helene is not like nobody's caring enough to give this woman any like help that she needs.
Yeah, that's true.
This woman,
There's
in the
a
course of the novel, her daughter is institutionalized, which I can only imagine is a horrible thing as a mother. She's obviously having a hard time letting go. She keeps, you know, she's showing up at the hospital. The nurses keep trying to like brush her off. She's not getting to spend a lot of time with Kate, so she's alienated from her daughter, and she is sort of, she's basically forced to have an abortion. Her husband threatens to take Kate if she does not have an abortion because she is pregnant with a married man's baby. She's pregnant with Les Goodwin's baby is what is implied, and Les Goodwin is married. And his wife Felicia, I think, I don't think, know about the affair, although that's a little unclear. Some of the
No, that's.
relationships and what people do and don't know, I think, are unclear in this novel.
She is
Purposely.
she's alienated from a lot of people in this book, but specifically every female character. Building on your point, you're right. There's a line that I don't have in front of me because I didn't write it down, but I'm remembering it. She meets another actor in an elevator at some point, coming in and out of her agent's office or something. And there's a part in the book where he pays her a compliment, and she reflecting on it realizes that the compliment is not really about her. The compliment is being given to Carter's wife.
Oh,
Like
yes.
the actor is saying something about a director he wants to work with's wife. It's like complimenting someone's child. It's not about the child's ego. It's so the parent hears you say something nice about the kid. That's the same vibe, like the same energy that she gets this compliment from this actor.
Right. Like it's ingratiating. It's to make Carter feel good. It's so that he can come back and be like, oh, you know, someone said this nice thing about your wife. It makes the actor look good, and it has nothing
Yeah.
deeply to do with her.
Like even the shallow Hollywood, like surface level compliments she's getting about her appearance are for a guy. They're not really meant for her.
Right. I could save this for quotes, but I want to talk about it now. It's something I think that I like in the writing is how is like the short little vignettes. So this
Yeah.
is technically chapter 26, right? And it's one page and it's one single conversation. So Mariah is out with Les Goodwin, and this is the conversation. She says, "I want a very large steak," she said to Les Goodwin in a restaurant on Melrose at 8 o'clock that night. "And before the very large steak, I want three drinks. And after the steak, I want to go somewhere with very loud music." "Like where?" "I don't know where." "You ought to know where. You know a lot of places with loud music." "What's the matter with you?" "I am just very, very, very tired of listening to you all." I highlighted that, and my note that I wrote next to that is Queen.
No, there's a
And I should point out that
that
this.
particular chapter stands out, and it's something about the specificity of what she wants. And it's also something I can't put my finger on it, but there's something about the fact that the first thing she lists is a very large steak. There's some sort of energy behind like that statement that is that care they like there's something about that very specific request that carries us through the rest of that chapter, which
Yes.
is, like you said, a single page.
And I will point out that this conversation, this scene is the same day. This is immediately the evening following her abortion.
So we're
She's
talking
had the
about the abortion.
procedure. She goes immediately out and then she's meeting Les Goodwin, who does not know that this is happening. She arranges to meet him a little later because she has the appointment. And so that's when this conversation takes place.
Let's do the plot real quick. We open the book with first person Mariah Wyeth, and we are told in her narration that her name is pronounced Mariah, even though it is clearly spelled Maria. I won't go on my tangent about that, but I don't care for it. But then we get a first person from Helene, we get first person from Carter, we get first person from Mariah again, then we drop into third person and we go back in time. But from the first three chapters, we learn that Mariah is in some sort of institution, voluntary, I believe, but some sort of mental health facility or a probably not as severe as a sanitarium, but like a recuperation spa sort of place. There's doctors there.
I mean, it's Hollywood, so I feel like a lot of those places exist for famous
Yeah,
rich people.
I don't know what the proper name for them is, but it's not rehab clinic in the way you and I think of a rehab clinic. We're like, you're a South Carolina person stressed out on like meth and alcohol and all sorts of bad choices, and you have to go to like rehab. It's West Coast rehab.
It's for people that are suffering from a nervous breakdown, which is what they would refer to
Yes.
things like this as in these days. Although I would say that, I will do a brief callback to Valley of the Dolls. Women were institutionalized very differently in this time period.
Well, Mariah has a pool, so
Because,
it's
well, because.
it's not the one they put what's the character's name from
No, Neely.
Neely. It's not the one they put
It's
Neely
not
in.
the one they put Neely in, for sure. But at this time, your husband could institutionalize you for like just being like unhappy or for like wanting a divorce
No, sure.
in the 50s and 60s. So I do just want to point that out, that like for women going into these places was a little bit different than we think of it now. But yes, it does seem to a little bit have a little bit more of that place that we sent, that we would send actresses or rich people to
Yeah.
sort of recoup
So
mentally.
she's in there, and we learn that she is that her daughter is in an institution or a medical facility as well, and that she wants to get her out. We learn that from Helene and Carter's narration that BZ, someone named BZ, is dead, and we learn from their narration that they believe Mariah killed him. That's how we start the book. And then we go back in time and we learn that Mariah is from nowhere, really. They moved around a lot. She went out to New York, got into modeling very quickly. It worked out. Her mother died. That didn't make her feel good at all, of course. She stopped modeling for a while after that. Her first marriage or relationship with Ivan Costello ended, and she went out to Hollywood with Carter, who put her in two movies, two or three
He put her
movies.
in two movies, one that actually is produced,
One's like a
about a
biker
biker
flick,
gang.
yeah, which were popular at the time. One's like an art house film that's just her. And it's kind of a study. We get the feeling of like her moroseness. Like it's just wander, like her wandering around New York, and she realizes later that he was kind of like editing it in a particular way. And while nothing is directly stated in this book, we get the idea that it was kind of a study in her sorrow, the kind of sad way she conducts herself, I guess. So she went out west with Carter. Carter's producer is Beezy, who is married to Helene. And then the plot is that her and Carter keep breaking up. They're deeply unhappy as a couple. Mariah is having an affair with Les Goodwin. She gets pregnant. Carter tells her he's like absolutely done. He and Kate, their child who's in the institution, that they're done unless she has an abortion and gets rid of it. She has the abortion. They all hang out some more.
Well, she
And
sort of
then
continue. I mean, she sort of unravel. Like, she's kind of already unraveling, and the abortion, I think, causes deep a deeper unravel, right? Like,
yeah.
it deepens her sadness and her nihilism.
And then at some point, she's like kind of, everyone realizes she's like really bad off. She's acting out. She's not doing well. She goes out to the desert with Carter, Beezy, and Helene while Carter and Beezy finish the film they're working on. And while they're out there, Beezy kills himself in front of her and she just lets it go. He kills himself and she lays there with him and he dies. And then that's the end of the book.
Correct.
Did I
And I
miss
would
anything?
also, yes, I will also point out that Beezy and Helene's marriage is a sham. Beezy is a homosexual, and
Yes.
his mother pays Helene. She funds their lifestyle. She pays Helene to be married to him so that he can look upstanding,
Yes.
so that he can look, you know.
And those are our principal characters. So just to put the abortion in context, that's how it comes about. That's how it happens. And then she's out with Les Goodwin, who doesn't know that this happened and whose wife does not know that they're having an affair, although everyone else seems to, right? Carter, BZ, Helene all know that they're having an
They
affair.
all seem to know that's true.
Everyone also seems to know that BZ is gay and that the marriage is to keep his wealthy mother happy.
So something that we see between Mariah and Carter, are these empty conversations. They're having the same. I think that dialogue is really good. I think the arguments between them, the arguments that don't really solve anything, that don't really go anywhere, and it's kind of just them hurting each other, I think they're extremely realistic. I think they're extremely well written
If you've
as
been
an
in a
example of
relationship with
a,
someone and had a fight, you can find a fight that you had in these like little fragments. Like they make perfect sense. It's uncanny.
yes, exactly. They are, these are conversations, but these are conversations between people who should no longer be together.
Yeah.
That's what's happening in fractured relationships. So I think that's really excellent writing. I actually think a lot of the dialogue in this is really, I think a lot of the dialogue in this is very realistic. And I think that I think that lack of connection, between the characters. I think we see kind of like the lack of connection between Helene and Mariah. You know, this is somebody who's ostensibly, I mean, this friend, you know, of her and her husband's, it's kind of one of the few women that we see her, it's the only woman that we really see her have like a friendship or a connection with. And it's such a shallow connection. I mean, Helene comes over to check on her, but that's really very like businessy because her husband and Carter work together. It's not because she has this deep caring for Mariah or because they have any sort of close friendship. She kind of glosses very quickly over like, oh, it doesn't seem like you're doing very well. My mother-in-law bought me a new emerald ring.
Helene does at least offer her friendship. It's not a very good friendship. That is true.
It's not a, it is not a very deep friendship.
Even
she is there.
after she believes that, like from her perspective, that Mariah killed her husband, she still goes to visit her in that, like when we meet her in the beginning, when we first meet Helene, when the sort of strange first person chapters that start this novel and then don't reappear. When we have those, she's trying to go out and visit her at the facility that she's at, and Mariah won't see her. And she can see Mariah laying by the pool through the windows at the
Oh, right,
place.
yeah.
And she's just not taking visitors. And she like went all the way. She brought her a care package and a box, magazines. She offered, I bring this up not to be disagreeable. I bring this up to point out the fact that Mariah is not a main character whose side we necessarily are on. I mean, that she's who we're with, but like she's not the moral center of the book. In fact, she's, I would say, as poorly behaved as anybody else in the novel is. Like she's as bad as anyone else.
She's accepting money to stay married. She's accepting money to stay in a sham marriage because she
No,
prefers to have
Mariah.
money and a comfort. Oh, I'm sorry. I
I'm
missed
saying
that.
Mariah. I'm not saying that, like, I don't bring up Helene's like offer of friendship like to be disagreeable. I'm just saying she is offering her friendship. Like Mariah is not a pleasant person.
She's not, but I think that Helene's friendship does it feels it does it feels transactional.
Yeah, it's flippant. Like she's just another like woman who is around that class level.
But I feel
And
like it's like,
their
like I
husbands
feel
are
like
making a film
but
together.
like BZ is sending her over there because it's like, listen, like I work with Carter and we
Yeah.
know things are bad over there, and this is your role as a wife.
Yeah.
This is why you're paid to be my wife, is to do is to do is to have this role. This is kind of this is your job, because they don't have a traditional marriage. And again, those are the roles of wives to these kinds of men, particularly in this time period, right? Where like you're a business wife.
No, it is a transactional friendship. I'm just saying she does actually offer her friendship, though. Like she
It's
shows
true.
up.
She
She's
shows up. She continues to go over there.
like,
She is not a very deep person to there to therefore, be offering any
and it's
real
the
therapeutic
no, Helene is
any real
offering.
therapeutic form of friendship.
Helene is offering gestures in the guise of friendship because why not? What else is going on a Wednesday? Like we could do this, which is part of what utterly, utterly depresses the shit out of Mariah
Right.
is this kind of transactional friendship and behavior and the sort of emptiness that she can feel behind it. But Mariah is not a pleasant person, and she's not filled with a bunch of answers or behavior that counteracts any of this. Like she is not going around offering anybody anything. Not even
She,
like
no,
an
she is
alternative
not.
of something that she thinks is better. She's offering nothing. Like she is just showing up at Helene's, bringing nothing. Helene is showing up at hers transactionally with a box of magazines, with a handful of what are, they have old drugs in this. Darvon,
Secanols,
Secanols, Nembutals, yeah, old
Nembutals. Secanols, Nembutals, yeah.
old timey drugs.
Old time drugs.
Like
The,
she's
well, I
showing
mean,
up
those,
with
well,
stuff.
those are what are considered, those are like mother's little pills, mother's little helpers. That's what those pills were, right? Those were considered kind of like housewife drugs
I'm just saying, like,
for depressed housewives
anytime
during
Mariah's
this
over at
time.
their house, it doesn't sound like she brings anything, like, not even a bottle of wine.
That's true.
Like, she
Well, she's, I mean, and she's not fulfilling her role, right? I think maybe she sees her role differently, in her relationship with Carter, and she's not filling this business wife role, and Helene is.
The thing with Kate, her daughter, is interesting because we get from Mariah's narration that she's like going to get out of there and she's going to get Kate. And there's a little implication that like Carter is the one who keeps her in the facilities. And then we see when she visits the facilities where Kate is, that Kate is like troubled. Like there's something the matter with her. Like she's not interacting in a normal way. Like she's screaming from the Kate is like actually troubled. Like she needs to be in a facility probably.
Yes, they were probably not able to really care for her and to handle her. She would not be living, she would not be in, a typical school program.
No, and like she doesn't make any attempts to actually get Kate out. It's just a thing she says. And the only time that we
It's
see
just a
them
thing she
interact.
says. And I mean, and she's struggling being separated from her daughter. I can't imagine the feeling. I can't imagine that there's not some sort of feeling of failure to have to institutionalize your child, regardless of what like the diagnosis is or like the reason behind it, right? So it's like this child could be a danger to like them or herself because they're not able to care for her. But I cannot imagine that as a parent, that wouldn't feel like some level of failure to have your child removed from your home because this is not a teenager. This is not somebody who was like older and troubled. Kate is still a child. We're not, I don't think we're given an age, but she is still a child.
I get the feeling she's between like 4 and 6.
That's what I think too.
Like
Yes, I think
somewhere.
she's not a toddler or a baby. She's old enough, I think, to have probably been destructive enough that this was a decision that they had to come to, for herself and whatnot.
What I'm getting at though is Mariah is an unreliable narrator. Like we hear this, even if your daughter is in a facility, you can do things to help your daughter and be with your daughter and connect with your daughter. She's not allowed to go there. She won't call them when she's going there and follow the schedule and learn about Kate's treatment. And she won't go there and see her daughter inside the context of like the help she's being given. She just keeps showing up and demanding to see her. And it's not that she's not allowed to do that, is that they're like, there's visiting hours. She sees doctors. She has a program. You need to do th She won't do those things. Kate won't follow them. Carter is the one who's taking care of Kate, like who got her put into a facility where she is getting the help she needs,
Correct.
who I imagine goes there, at the times when he's supposed to, so that he can interact with his daughter in a way that is comforting and pleasant for Kate. Because when Mariah just shows up, Kate starts screaming and losing her mind and getting upset. Like she's actively upsetting her daughter. And there's also the only other kind of time we see them together is Carter's story about when they were playing in the yard together and she was throwing water on her. And he said, hey, don't let her get chilled. And she just gets up and walks away from her and goes, your father would like to talk to you, and just walks off to the pool house.
I mean, she's a difficult
She's a bad
person.
mother.
She's
She's a
a
bad
difficult
mother.
person. She's probably not a great mother, but this is also, I'm not defending that. This is a woman that is suffering from depression. This is a
She
woman that
is.
is suffering from, from depression. This is a woman that is suffering from some mental health disorders, right? And there's not help for it. People are just dismissing her and alienating her. She doesn't have these like real relationships, these really supportive relationships to help somebody through that. And I don't like, there's like a meme that goes around on Instagram about Eeyore from Winnie the Pooh and how like, Eeyore is depressed, but his friends don't like, they're not down on him for that. They still invite him to everything. They still hang out with him. Like they're nice to him. They're not trying to fix his depression. They're not like down on him and talking about how his depression like bums them out. They just include him. And that is kind of a beautiful thing. That is kind of a beautiful sentiment, right? And so like when people have like depression or they have these mental, you have like a mental disorder and you have a support system, that's a very different outcome. And I'm not saying that the support system it does not feel challenged or that these things are not difficult, like that this someone like this wouldn't be difficult for them. But this woman has never really had a support system. Her mother, like her mother died, like her mother dies. Her father is a gam you know, her father's a gambler. That's not reliable.
No, and he also dies. She is
Yes,
alone in the world when
she is
we
alone in the world. Her
except for Benny Austin.
mother dies. No one even tells her. Yes, her father also dies. She has this sort of like abusive relationship with Ivan Costello in New York.
Yeah.
Carter is again sort of a transactional relationship. Like it's like he's very clearly sort of attracted to this like sad girl, this like
Yeah.
sad, beautiful girl persona that she has. And then when he lives with it,
He does. Yes, that's it exactly.
and
He
then he lives
likes,
with it and he doesn't like it.
he's a director, he's an artist, and he likes this mopey, sad muse that he follows around New York, filming her as she's a model. I'm sure that doesn't hurt. Then it's just in his home every day, and he doesn't actually, know how to deal with it or want to, I don't think. He wants her to snap out of it, is kind of
He
the.
wants her to just snap out of it, and that just isn't how something like this works.
No. And she is alone in the world. Like, there are no more authority figures from her childhood around. She bumps into Benny Austin one time, but he's kind of a goober. He's got no answers to anything. He's still talking about the how Silverwell could have really made them a lot of money, and she has to remind him, like, it doesn't exist anymore. You're talking
Right.
about a thing that was blown up in bomb testing. It just isn't there. It's not. It would have been valuable. It's obliterated, Benny.
Right.
You live in a fake world.
So something that I think, something else I want to talk about is when she has the abortion and just like so there's sort of the, I don't know, the middleman, the steward.
Yeah.
You know, she calls this guy, he asks her some questions, he sets up this shadowy, like, oh, I'm gonna meet you, gets in the car with her and drives to the house where this, you know, where this doctor performs abortion. Cause it's illegal. It's illegal at this point,
It's
right?
illegal.
It's illegal.
Her actual doctor, the actual doctor that she went to at any rate, because she was getting her hair done at Saks and she saw the sign and she happened to be there getting her hair done. So the doctor that she went to knows she's going to do it. Like, he can't do it.
He can't do it. He knows that she's going to do it, and she does follow up with him because she's having
Yeah.
complications. She's having bleeding.
Like, it's illegal, but it doesn't, in this book, it doesn't seem like the doctor's not about to turn her over to the
But
fuzz.
we are dealing with rich, because we are dealing with rich people,
Yeah.
right? So we are dealing with, like, we know a guy, it'll be safe, it'll be expensive. We can all just sweep this under the rug because they're in this Hollywood lifestyle.
And she goes out to Encino.
Two important men will be marred by her having this baby. So she is ushered into having this abortion, essentially, right? Les Goodwin and Carter, their reputation, they're going to be marred. This is going to be embarrassing for them.
I imagine Felicia would be upset as well.
I imagine Felicia would also not enjoy this.
Yeah,
However,
I think lots of people would be impacted by the affair that she
lots
and
of
Les
people would
Goodwin
be impacted
had.
by this, but the decision is made. But the decision is made for her. She is forced into this decision, right? And
I mean, Carter tell I mean
that is why this doctor would go along with, like, oh yeah, let me help you find a solution for this. I can't do it. I'm an upstanding doctor who sees rich people.
Well, he doesn't give her the abortionist, though. Carter sets it up.
Carter sets it
The
up.
doctor just knows she's going to do it. He tells her just make sure she finds someone good. And then he does a follow-up and tells her that, like, she got someone who was good and did a good job. Carter knows someone who gives her a number that she has to call, who then brokers this thing.
But it's like almost a funny scene.
It is almost a funny scene. The guy who drives her over.
It's like, oh, you know, let me ask you one question, all right? Mariah nodded and tightened her grip on the steering wheel. Get pretty good mileage on this, or no?
Yes. No, it is darkly and terribly funny. The absolute dumbass who, like, shepherds her from, like, the neutral, non-suspicious meeting place over to the house where the doctor works.
And then the doctor himself.
He also has questions about, like, television actresses on the way back, right?
Yeah, he's just making this, like, polite chit chat. But part of it, the doctor says to her, this kind of blew, I mean, this blew my mind, but it also didn't. I don't know why it would have blown my mind, I guess, that this would be the attitude that this man has. And the doctor, of course, he's very nice to her. He's not rude, right? It is. As far as these, like, backdoor things go, this is a best case scenario for this time and situation. This is just induced menstruation, she could hear the doctor saying. Nothing to have any emotional difficulties about. Better not to think about it at all.
Yeah, well,
And I guess what else is he going to say to her? Was he going to make her feel
yeah.
worse about it and be like, oh, look at the situation you've gotten yourself in, and you're making, I don't.
He's trying to flatten it into a medical procedure, which I think is what lots of people would like the world to think of it as, right? Like that's sort of the, like he's a guy who's risking his entire profession to like do this service.
To do
And he's
this, I mean,
trying.
he's being paid very well for it, let's point out. But sure.
He is, but I mean, he, they shoot those guys today for performing abortions.
It's true.
Back then, they like, they killed you first, then they shot you. Like that wasn't, like he's going on the rack if he gets caught.
It's true. But yeah, I don't, I think they're just so casual. They're just so casual about it. Like both of these men, that it is almost kind of this, it is the scene with like the steward, like I said, this kind of like middleman, I think is particularly funny.
The steward in particular is funny. The doctor, I was relieved that the doctor was nice. Like I was worried that the doctor was going to be just like that he wasn't going to be a doctor, I guess is actually what I was worried about, that it was just going to be some joker who like someone had told him how to do it, and that like she was, I thought she was going to get like all messed up. Like just a like a terrible thing happens to
Right.
her. Like and she's like I was deeply relieved that it was just a doctor.
No, that he is just kind. It's fine. He seemingly knows
Yeah.
what he's, he seemingly knows what he's doing.
The
I guess that
dumbass he has working as his point man was darkly funny. And also, he was the part that made me sad, but I was like deeply relieved that Mariah found an actual doctor. Because the way the whole thing goes down, like Carter gives her a number. Like every conversation in here, it's cryptic. The one over the phone that she just has with a disembodied voice, it's like, write down this address, be there on this date, bring this money. It has to be in a bag, it has to be cat, all of these things. And I was just like, man, she's going to get out there and, like, I don't know, three Yahoos are just going to throw her around a room or something. Like, it's going to be a horror. I just read Less Than Zero. I'm prepared
Oh,
for like
right.
the Bret
Yeah.
Easton Ellis
Oh, and I
version of this
forget this is the
scene.
first time you've read Play It As It Lays. This is I've
Yeah.
I've read this before, so I did know that that aspect was fine. I forgot that you just I forgot this was your first time. So yes, as a follow-up from Less Than Zero, I'm sure it is very
Well, and the tone that Bret Easton Ellis lifted from this is so spot on that there were turns in this book that I kept expecting to be horrific, like in Less Than Zero.
Yeah, so that's.
I had a different reaction to the doctor just because I was so relieved he was a doctor. Like that he performed
Right.
the procedure and she's okay. Like I know she's worried about it afterwards, and then another doctor is like, "You've got some bleeding and some discharge. It's going to be all right. You're completely fine. We'll help you take care." Like, but I was just relieved it was that it worked.
So that brings up an interesting point because something, a note that I made, something I was kind of asking myself is like, is this book less shocking than Less Than Zero? But I think it
This.
depends on who is reading it and when we are reading it. I can see that this would have been an incredibly subversive book at the time. So again, like, Mariah, for instance, is sort of not fulfilling her like traditional wifely and motherly role that we're seeing as and as more expected of women during this time, for one. For two, there's an illegal abortion. And
I would,
it's described.
yeah.
This is not something that happens in chat. I mean, it's not
No, it all happens on the page. It's not like
it
a.
all happens on this on the page. It's not something that happens in shadows. Like we're kind of walked through the experience with her down from like to your point, like this the phone call, the shadowy setup for the appointment, like it's creepy. You do kind of have this bad feeling. This is not how I would choose to have any sort of medical procedure done.
I would
Do
say
you
that
like
this, no.
to just go to some creepy
No,
house
there's
where you
new,
don't have the
no, and it is, I'm saying that I was relieved that it was a real doctor. It is still, I mean, it's still a horrible experience for Mariah. There's newspaper on the fucking floor. Like
100%. Exactly. That's my
like she's a
point.
bad puppy. Like there is plenty of terrible things in that scene.
So I feel like it, like I mean this book I think for when it would have come out was like really would have been really shocking, really subversive.
So what I want to say about that is I think these are things that probably were surprising and I guess shocking if we're going to use that term for an audience at the time, but this book is far more sophisticated. In Less Than Zero, the things that are shocking, like all caps shocking, are there to shock. The things that are shocking in this book are real things.
Yes, that is such a good point.
I think I mentioned in our Less Than Zero episode when we were talking about it that I don't believe the things in this book. Like, I don't believe that his friends were like this. I don't believe kids are like this now. Like, this feels like it felt very heightened and, amped up specifically for the shock
For shock
value
value.
of it. Yeah. This doesn't feel like that. This feels like very real things happening to very real people that are normally not discussed and that are maybe concentrated within the characters of this novel. The fact that there is a illegal abortion, several affairs, a sort of, I don't know, couple swapping, promiscuity, whatever, adultery going on, the suicide, the spousal abuse, like it,
It is
ten people seem to
concentrated
have
into this.
a lot of crappy
It is
behavior going on.
concentrated into this small group of people, but these are not far-fetched things.
No, these are very real things. This is
These are
all
very
very,
real. These are
yeah.
very real things.
The
And I guess.
behavior of these people is real, whereas the behavior of people in Less Than Zero, I can tell is there so that the characters have something shocking to do.
And I mean, I think that's supported because I mean, we talked about, Less Than Zero is his first work. And so we kind of talked about how like in Less Than Zero, we see the foreshadowing, if you will, of how much more violent, how much more gory, how much more sexual his books become, like the longer he writes. And then certainly culminating with like American Psycho specifically.
Brady Sinelis is writing about things that seem like they don't, that they've never really happened because he's wrote it between he was 14 to 17, and there are things he doesn't know anything about. He's making them up. Joan Didion is an adult writing this with life experience, and she's met friends. Even if she hasn't personally gone through all these things, like she's experienced adult life, and these are experiences from actual adult life, like a lived adult life.
Yeah, and something that I kind of made a note on for like Brady Sinelis, because again we see how much he's picked up, we see how much he's picked up, like he is really using this almost as like a
A
blueprint
blueprint.
to lay his own story over, and I wonder if part of his thinking into yes into your point again, he likes the shock value. Again, I think
Yeah.
that's. We see that early in Less Than Zero, and then that gets amplified, like I've said more and more throughout his writing.
And when you're 18 years old, that's what you do.
But I feel like when, but he's also somebody who I do think he's like an intelligent person. I think he was like an intelligent young person. I think we can see that in the fact that he was able to write that novel. I feel like he probably looked at this of like. This was really subversive for the time. This is stuff that was happening more in the shadows. This isn't something that was maybe like quite out the affairs, the abortion. Like this stuff isn't.
Yeah.
We were all kind of. This is something that maybe people were pretending wasn't happening so much, right? We weren't talking about it in quite the same way. It wasn't in TV and movies all of the time, like the
Oh,
way
no.
it is now, and in novels the way it is now. So I feel like I'm wondering if he felt like, okay, I can see that this was really shocking at the time. But this isn't very shocking now. This is all stuff that's kind of par for the course now, and I want to up the ante.
Yes.
I'm going to use this as a blueprint, but like I need things that are more shocking because this stuff is no longer very shocking.
Did you hear
Dirty,
about?
there's an abortion in Dirty Dancing.
Yeah.
That does go poorly,
It does go
right?
poorly.
It does
Yes.
go poorly.
And Jerry Orbach has to come in and take care of things.
He saves the day.
Did you hear about that show that I think The Weeknd and Johnny Depp's daughter were the stars of that was.
On HBO, and then it was like I heard it. I kind of wanted to watch it, and then it kind of got tanked in reviews.
Apparently it was terrible, but that show, everything that I read about sort of indicates that it was like they saw the success of Euphoria and were like, just, what if we amped it up? What if we just like took it even farther?
Oh, what if, yes, what if we made it even more terrible?
Yeah, like it's not like based on anything real. It's just like, what if we just like upped the things that are subversive about this and just like made it even more twisted? I'm doing a funny voice when I do it for that, but that feels a little bit like what Brady Stenellis was doing with Less Than Zero, but I think he took it a little more seriously and he wrote a much better book than that was, but that is the things at the end of Less Than Zero feel like a young person just being like, I gotta make this graphic, man. Gotta, like, what's the worst thing I can think of?
And you know, something in the writing too that I noticed is kind of again, because you know, I mean part of the reason we've chosen to do this book now is, you know, because we read Less Than Zero, we were talking about the you know, the influences. So it's interesting to read this book and see how much he was influenced by Joan Didion. But we talked about how his writing is very repertorial. Like it's very detailed. What's happening in scenes is very clear. In Less Than Zero, unless it's not meant to be, unless we don't really need to know what's going on. And I feel like Joan Didion's writing is very good. She is pointedly less clear about what is happening between people and what is happening in certain scenes.
And I will say
Because her
it
writing is
doesn't.
clear and descriptive. So she's leaving us out of things for a reason.
If I have a complaint with this, I think usually it pays off, right? Like it is very obscure, or not obscure, that's not the word I'm looking for. It is very opaque, a lot of the, like, what's going on. But usually 2 or 3 pages later, a dialogue that was sort of mysterious 2 or 3 pages earlier is paid off. Right? Like there's a certain exchange that happens, and then a few pages later we get like, oh, BZ's gay. That's what this is. It didn't, I understand now, this scene I read 3 pages earlier now makes sense. That's what's going on. Some of the stuff with Carter, some of the stuff with her daughter, some of these things, like, you don't get it, and then you get a payoff from it. Backing up what you said, like, it is not a very clear book. The writing is very precise. It is not very clear necessarily what's going on at any given time. I think it usually pays off, with the exception of BZ killing himself. I gotta tell you, I didn't, when it happened, when it started happening, I'm just sort of like, sorry, you're also depressed? And then he's like, lay here and hold my hand. And I'm like, sorry, are you two friends? Do you two like each other? Why would you be in her room? Do you like
We
her?
do see some scenes between we do see scenes between these two people.
Like, there's the scene when they first meet, and like she mentions several times that he does it, like he's talking to Carter, but he just keeps staring at her. I went back and read all the BZ scenes after the end to try and find what I hadn't found the first time. Like, I just went through, and anywhere his name was, I read those scenes. And looking for it like that, I could find like the scene where they first go over and he's running the very high quality pornographic films, and he just keeps his eyes locked on her, and he has the copy of the movie Mariah that he shows all the time. That's just her wandering around. And I was like, oh, he sees it too, that she's bummed out like he is. That's what that means. But for the most part, just the first read through,
I agree with you, the first read through.
I would not have expected BZ to be a, like, I honestly, like, all the scenes between them seemed so flippant that I briefly forgot that it was even mentioned that he was murdered in the beginning, that that's kind of what we're like waiting to find out happened. Like, did she murder him?
Agreed. I felt like that the first time I read the book too. It seemed like it came out of nowhere for me. But then I think in this, because I knew what happened with him in this second reading, I think I did notice like the connection between the two of them a little bit more, because they are in similar situations. Mariah's depression is terribly inconvenient for everybody, and so is his homosexuality. I think that there are deeper and other things, but I think that's a sort of direct
And
parallel.
there is, I found that line. He sets all those people up after a party they go to like go back to his house and hook up, because that's also a thing he does on the side, it seems, or maybe a thing he does for fun, or it's expected of him. I don't know. They like puts together orgies or
Yeah,
something.
but again, it's imprecise because we don't really need to know. Joan Didion doesn't really need for us to know the specifics of that. We just need
I
to know
found
that these
that a
people live a very
little.
decadent lifestyle.
Well, she says a thing to him. She says, "Aren't, again, making it more unclear." She goes, "Aren't you tired of, aren't you sick of doing favors for people?" And she says, there's a longer pause than Mariah was expecting before he says, "You have no idea how tired." But that was the only place I could find that like gave an indication that like BZ was not like thrilled with his life.
They see something in each other. But I mean, I think that if there's something, his mother pays some woman to be married to him because she's ashamed of him.
No, sure. I don't disbelieve that BZ. I'm sorry. It's not that BZ's not allowed to be bummed. In the course of this book, though, when all of a sudden he's going to kill himself and he comes to Mariah's room to do it, or does she go to his room?
No, he comes to her. He comes to her room. Yeah.
And then he's like, lay here with me and hold my hand. I was just sort of like, oh,
But I mean,
why is.
he purposely goes to her because he understands that she's gonna let him do it.
Yeah, I guess I just was sort of like, oh, you two were close. I didn't. Nothing about any of your conversations prior to this made me think you two were
I don't
particularly
know that it's
chummy.
about their clo I don't know that it's about their closeness. I think that it is about the fact that they both, she says it at the end of the book. It's the last line of the book.
The magnetism of like
One
deeply inexplicable sorrow.
thing in my defense, not that it matters. I know something Carter never knew, or Helene, or maybe you. I know what nothing means and keep on playing. Why, BZ would say, why not? I say, BZ also knows what nothing is. This is a book about loneliness and alienation and her and nihilism, right? And her fact that nothing applies, nothing matters. She says this over and over in the book. And if that's how you feel about life, she just continues to keep going for some reason. And BZ is like, not like, no. BZ also knows that there's nothing. He also feels that there's nothing. He also feels nothing applies. He sees that in her and he knows. I don't know that it's about their relationship or some closeness that they had. He understands that she feels like he does. And that because nothing applies, she won't stop him because it doesn't matter if that's
Well,
what he wants to do.
speaking of reaching a nadir, you want to do one stars?
Let's talk about our one star. Yeah, let's
All right.
talk about our one stars.
All right. We're going to talk through the common elements of the one star reviews on Goodreads for Play It As It Lays. So one that is, let's just get this one out of the way, but a very common one is that nothing happens. Nothing happens, nothing happens, nothing happens.
And this has been a common one star review. This has been a
I
complaint from
think,
some other things we've read.
yeah, I think there's people who want very plotty books, like, someone's got to get to the bomb before it goes off on the side of the mountain and triggers the rock slide that is going to kill the baby deer. And that's fine. I feel like people who look for that, though, are the people who find books like this and go, like, nothing happens. That's where I think that comes from. Because a lot of stuff happens in this book. There's an abortion, there's a suicide, there's Mariah gets hit a bunch. She drives around in a yellow Corvette. I don't know, there's lots of things happen.
A lot of things happen.
She
That's true.
no, she has an affair, or she has a one night stand with that guy and
She
then
steals his car.
steals his
It's
car,
got
goes out to
marijuana in it
Vegas.
after it was
Yeah.
reported stolen.
She gets arrested. The thing that happens in this book that I think is very funny is that she and Carter have a courthouse divorce. Like in a lot of books where they would maybe have like a courthouse marriage, they need to get a divorce, but those like the abortion are also not like super available at this time. So they just agree that Helene will be the witness that I think, is it like physical abuse that she
Yeah,
testifies to
she just
having
makes it.
seen?
She, which I mean, I don't want to say she makes it up because that is apparently a thing that's happening. We see it happen a couple times.
But
It's kind
Carter's
of
just sort of
casual.
like, Carter's just like thumbs up. Yeah, let's get it done. Just go out there, say I beat you up
Well,
a bunch.
because to your point, divorces were harder to come by. The divorce laws are incredibly different now. And more in favor, I think maybe of both parties, but certainly more in favor of women. But like there weren't a lot of grounds for getting divorced.
No, it wasn't the done thing, I realized, but I think that scene is very funny that they don't have a courthouse wedding. they have a courthouse divorce that like that is sort of plotted and paced a little bit like the courthouse wedding would
A little,
be in a
oh yes, a
happier
little
book.
bit. Yeah,
But
that's a
just
good
like, what if
point.
we just go do it, babe? What if we just go get it done? Okay, all right. You know who could be our witness? Helene. It's all of the beats. It's just in the opposite
Yeah, just like in the
direction.
opposite way. Like, yeah, no, Carter's abusive. Yep, sure am. That's me. Let's sign on the
And then
line.
Helene leans over in the middle. She's like, Carter, guess who had surgery that we saw at lunch? Guess who had a face
Oh
job?
yeah. Oh no, it's the two lesbians feeding each other pate or something is
Yes,
what she sees.
one of them was an actress and one of them had had a face job. She had seen the
Oh
scars on the
yeah, she can
side.
see
Yeah.
the.
I thought that was a very, but yeah, a lot, I think a lot of stuff happens in this. But I, if you're look, if you're someone who mostly or only enjoys Catroni Award novels or Gillian Flynn novels, I can see how it feels like nothing happens in this. And I like both. I mentioned both of those authors because I like both of those authors. Lots and lots of stuff happens in their novels. They're very
Right, these
plotty.
right, these because Conversations with Friends, I remember, was one where that also came up of just like, well, like nothing happens here. And it's like, I don't know, like people are having affairs and stuff. There's kind of a lot going on in here.
I also just reminded, or just that also just made me think we are eventually going to have to work our way to Gone Girl.
I could That's fine. We could do that. I don't think I've read it.
Oh, no?
No.
Oh,
I don't
as
think I've
far as
read.
like.
I think the only thing I've read by Gillian Flynn was a short story.
Oh, well, we don't have to do it after this one, of course, but we need to find our way there as far as like modern classics
Yeah, I'm
go.
down. What
So.
other, what else? What else does Goodreads? How else is Goodreads down on this book?
So another common one-star complaint is that people hate Mariah. And they hate Mariah, that Mariah is a terrible person and she's a lousy protagonist and she kind of has it coming. No one said that she has it coming, but like mopey rich woman behaves badly and then surprised, like bad behavior, you know, catches up with her.
Sure. I mean, and you know what? I can see and understand that opinion because again, like what we were just talking about, not ever. I feel badly for Mariah. I have a lot of empathy for Mariah, personally, for several reasons, I guess. I don't for several reasons, like her child's institutionalized, or
No, she's.
her life seems terrible. Both of her parents are dead. Like, you know, th things aren't great. She's clearly
She.
incapable of pulling herself out of this depression, but I
She's.
understand that not everybody looks at things that way. And like, yeah, she's not. I didn't end this book being like, man, you know who's awesome? Mariah. I just feel
No,
badly
she's.
for her, right? Do you know what I mean? Like, I don't come out of this like, well, she's kind of a likable character because she does these things that are likable. She doesn't. I just feel badly for her.
I also get I get that complaint. She is deeply unlikable and she is also has a hand in a lot of her own undoing. And I gotta tell you, like someone who's just always going around being like, everything means nothing, nothing matters, nothing applies is a fucking bummer. Like she's a
Oh, that's a
bummer.
huge bummer. The rest of us are out
Yeah.
here just trying to pretend that like that isn't a thing,
Like it's not an
or have found enough meaning in life that you don't feel that way. So, I mean, yeah, nobody needs to hear that all the time.
it's not a nuanced philosophy. It's not something that you hear someone say and you're like, they thought deeply about that. It mainly just seems sort of childish and immature and annoying to just be like, I don't care, nothing matters. Like it's a teenage refrain.
This is a person that somebody came to commit suicide because they knew that person wouldn't try to stop them, which does not say a lot of great things about Mariah.
No. Again, it is sort of like it is pointing out some of the hollowness and the emptiness of relationships. I think very specifically in Hollywood, but I think this came out in the 70s. It's sort of that look back at the 60s and I don't know, poking holes in some of the highfalutin talk about things, highfalutin talk about the culture and society at that time, and like kind of pointing out sort of the hollow core of it, right? The other chief number one complaint was that this book is just depressing. I don't like to read these things because they're depressing. I don't want to read this. It's depressing. I can't believe I did. I almost couldn't finish this because it was so depressing. I didn't feel that, but
You know what's funny is that remember we were
perhaps I have
talking?
perhaps I have a certain outlook on life that doesn't like go in for that kind of visceral response to a novel.
I mean, I don't think that like I don't think all of life is that happy. I mean, I don't think life's like depressing all the time. I don't think nothing applies, but like I don't
I
think
also think that
but I
depressing
also
things can be kind of funny. I suppose if that doesn't sound too terrible, like the
we have found
courtroom.
some things in this book that are kind of funny.
The courtroom scene is funny,
The courtroom
I
scene is
thought.
funny. I like we said, like the scene with the abortion middleman is also kind of funny in a way that's really dark. And
Carter's.
you and I've discussed, you and I have an appreciation for like dark nihilistic humor.
No, and some of her conversations with BZ are genuinely funny. Like BZ just giving her crap for being a bummer. Like they play funny together. Even Carter's single first person chapter in the beginning of this, where he tells the story about how he would say to people, like, I always have breakfast out, and I always read the trades, and I always this thing that isn't true, but he's just kind of saying because it makes him sound like a certain kind of director who always goes out for breakfast and catches up on the trades.
And she's like, he doesn't go out for breakfast.
That she just the minute he says it, he just she just she just immediately contradicts what he said and goes, in fact, he doesn't always go out for breakfast and he doesn't read the trades. As a matter of fact, he hasn't been out for breakfast since April 17th, and she knows the date. I understand why Carter's mad about that. But that's also very funny. It's it,
Yes
it
to
wouldn't
all of
be
those
funny.
things.
It wouldn't be funny if it happened to me. But it's very funny that she does it to Carter, I think.
And what's interesting is like when we talked about Less Than Zero, when I was reading Less Than Zero, I did like there were a few times that it was just like, I need a break from this. I need to go like look at something else for a few minutes. Like I like the, I like the book. I think it's a good book. But there were some times and because again, it is also like a fast read that you can kind of zip through. But there was a couple times that it was just like, I gotta go do something else. This is a lot to digest. And I don't feel that way with Play It As It Lays. It is shorter.
Neither do I.
I don't know that it's shorter. It is a fast, it feels like it though. I think it is a faster read because you have all those like little short, we have so many little short chapters or chapters that are maybe, only one or two pages or even just like a paragraph. So I do feel like there might just legitimately be less like verbiage in this book. But it goes by fast, and it did not have that same feeling of just like, let me go read, let me go do something else that isn't this depressing.
It feels less weighted, I think, than Less Than Zero because it feels more realistic and it feels like it they're real feelings and real experiences and real things that might happen to a person. And you can feel the weight a little bit of Brett Easton Ellis's effort with Less Than Zero. Does that make sense? Like it's trying a little bit. This one doesn't, this one feels effortless.
It does feel, yes, her writing, I think, really feels that way in general.
Yeah, this like pops by and I enjoyed reading it, even though it is sorrowful and depressing and I don't feel good about any of the things that happened to anybody in it. But it, man, it is sharp and precise and it goes by quick and I thought it was enjoyable to read.
Me too.
So both of us saying that brings me to the thing that was very interesting about the one stars that we have not seen any of the other one star sections that we've done is that almost, I won't say almost all of them, it wasn't almost all of them, but a lot of them said, because I had to go to the two stars to get some of these. There's not that many one stars. But even in the one stars, a lot of them are sort of like, I loved the writing. I just can't like this book. I hated the characters. It was depressing. I didn't like it. I feel like a book about nihilism isn't really a book about anything, but I loved the writing over and over and over again in these bad reviews. I loved the writing. I wish I could have given this, more stars, but it just was so unpleasant to read. But I loved the writing.
I mean, yeah, Joan Didion is a really beautiful is a really beautiful writer. She's very clear and precise. It's not quite so reportorial. I hope we're saying that right. I feel like that, like we talked about last time, that's a word I've only seen written down. But yes, I feel like it's not quite so like reportorial, but it is so, but it is so precise. It's so easy to like picture. It's so easy to like sort of picture and imagine what's happening. And I mean, I see that in her essays just as I see it in this novel.
All right. Do you want to do casting call?
Yes, our new segment. You want to introduce our new segment?
Yes. Who would you cast in the movie version of this? Now, sometimes when we do books like this one, there will have already been a movie version of that. We aren't talking about that one. We're especially not talking about it on this one when it was cast with Anthony Perkins and, I don't know, a bunch of 1970s actors that you've never heard of. I don't, that don't matter. Who would you cast today? In the version of this movie. So who did you pick to cast?
Okay, I
How many
picked
characters?
just BZ and Mariah.
Okay.
I have a few choices for Mariah because
Let's start with her. Do her first because I have her too.
I was playing it different ways. As it lays. Just playing it as it lays. Sorry, I could not resist. That was horrible.
Nicely done.
You might have to cut that out. Anyways, Chloe Sevigny?
Sevigny.
Sevigny? Chloe Sevigny?
I say it as French as possible. Sevigny.
Sevigny.
I don't know if it's correct, by the way. I just say it as French as
I
possible.
think a slightly this is not a dig at Chloe Sevigny, but it's a slightly younger version. I say that because I think Chloe Sevigny is maybe a little more around yours and my age, whereas Mariah is in her early 30s.
Oh, she's like 2 years older than me. Yeah,
But
Mariah's 30 in this, 30,
Mariah's 30,
31.
so let's say Chloe like Sevigny when she's 30, and I think just because she's a little, she has this she has this mysteriousness about her. I feel like she does sad. I feel like
That's interesting.
she does sad and odd very well.
No, she'd be a good choice. She's
Right?
also she's also got a lot of range.
Yes, she does, and so she does.
Like
I feel like I've seen her in so many different things.
No, she could go straight from Big Love to one of these Marvel movies to some sort of art house flick, back to a Marvel movie. I don't know, more prestige TV. She's all over the place. She can do a lot of stuff.
She's all over the place. And she was actually the first person that popped into my brain. And then my other two choices, one was Angelina Jolie. And I think that's maybe based on like the girl in a, maybe like, maybe that was based on the fact that she was in Girl Interrupted. And so I've seen her do Unhinged, you know, like in that capacity. And I think maybe also because of her looks. Angelina Jolie is somebody who I feel like can look really beautiful when she looks like shit.
Angelina Jolie is who they would have cast if they were cast if they were making this movie in like 2003. It would have been Angelina Jolie.
And I feel like if
A
this,
100%, that's who it would have
right?
been.
Exactly. That's what, and I, again, like from that, like kind of from
Coming
that
off of
era.
Gia, do you remember
Yeah.
Gia? Coming off of Gia, coming off of Girl Interrupted, coming off of Beautiful, Broken, and Haunted, like that was like what she did.
And then my more modern pick, as it were, if we were making this movie like today, is Jennifer Lawrence.
So I have J Law in my top three as well.
Oh wow, oh fun. Okay. Yeah, so
Yeah.
tell me who your other your th those are my those were my three Mariah picks. Tell me your three Mariah picks.
So I got J Law in my top three because I feel like it's just I don't know what I'm basing it on. Maybe I didn't like American Hustle, but she was really good in it. And
She's
Silver Linings
excellent
Playbook.
in a, she's excellent in both of those movies. I also didn't like American Hustle, but I really enjoyed Jennifer Lawrence's performance in it, and I think that she was the best part of that movie. And I think that was she was nominated for an Oscar or something for that. I want to say is like best supporting. She got it. I think she was at least nominated. I don't remember if she got an award for that. So I think other people were also like, this movie wasn't that great, but you know who was great? Jennifer Lawrence.
Yeah, she's got a range, and I think she could have done it. The sort of like it girl that I thought could do it is Jenna Ortega, because she
Ooh,
has that sort
I
of,
love that pick. Yeah.
she's got that sort of haunted quality, and she
She
is
does.
also, I think, around the right age. I know it doesn't matter how old an actor or actress really is in real life. They have like 28-year-olds playing teenagers, but she is around the right age.
She is. She could play.
Maybe a little, she might be a little young.
She might be a
J
little
Law
on the young side, but.
is a little older, but I have Jenna Ortega. And then my dark horse, like my less, perhaps, like perhaps less movie star pick was Suki Waterhouse.
Oh, Suki Waterhouse. Oh, yeah, she was just in Daisy Jones and the Six.
She's in this crazy movie called Bad Batch that is, I don't know, man, this lady wrote and directed this thing. It is this, I recommend it, but this sort of out there, I don't even know if it's post-apocalyptic or if it's just, all we know when the movie starts is just like this youngish girl goes through like this caged-in area where the Bad Batch lives. And man, she goes through some stuff before she gets to like this bizarre rave in the middle of it where Keanu Reeves is the DJ.
Oh, fun.
But she just like is so like, I don't know, she has that sort of ethereal, dangerous, adventurous at the same time quality in that movie. You should also check that film out. There's a lot of people weirdly in it. Jason Momoa is in it, Jim Carrey is in it, Keanu Reeves,
Recent Jim
Suki
Carrey?
Waterhouse.
This is like a more recent movie?
Like 2016.
Yeah, because I was gonna say, I don't feel like Suki Waterhouse has been around that long. Interesting.
No.
Oh, yeah, I'll take that
It's the first thing I ever
recommendation.
saw her in. Okay, who'd you cast for BZ?
John Travolta.
That's a good one for BZ. Because, I mean, you need a little younger, I think, Travolta than
Sure,
now.
younger. Yeah. So, I mean, I
Actually,
guess
I
when I was
gotta, you know
doing this,
what?
I was thinking like,
Wait, did you pick him because that's actually like the sort of like story on him is that he's gay, but his wives are play acting to like keep him
you
in the
know,
business?
not consciously, I think I was thinking more like Saturday Night Fever. Travolta is just
Because Beasley
also
does
like,
wear a gold medallion around his neck that he spins in the sun. Yeah, he
he does.
does.
It spins in the sun. And I think also, I mean, because he's, you know, he's tortured, right, in that movie. Like he's a person that is tortured. He is a person that is depressed and going through things. I don't, maybe unconsciously that is part of the reason, because I do know that that is the scuttlebutt, as it were, about John Travolta, is that he, with, you know, they have him as wives. They want him to be cast
That's the
as
gossip.
straight
Yeah,
because,
that's been the gossip for like
they want
20
to
years.
cast
I
him as straight because he was a leading man for such a long
yeah.
time. And so they didn't want people to know that he was gay. So that could have been like subconscious for me, but he just popped into my mind for BZ. And I'm not sure that I could, like I said, maybe it's because of Saturday Night Fever. I'm not sure that I had a specific like reason behind it.
I had Jonah Hill
Skinny Jonah
specifically.
Hill?
No, it doesn't matter. I just was like with a beard though. He does need to have a beard. It was the gold medallion scene is how I picked Jonah Hill. Like just oiled up late. They said that he was always oiled up and tanned.
Yeah.
And I can see Jonah Hill tanned, oiled up with a beard, laying out by that pool with a gold medallion around his neck. And
Yeah, all
that's
right. I could, that's fair.
my dark horse for BZ was Donald Glover. Because in Atlanta, he plays such a low key, maybe a little bit depressed character in that show. I don't know
Oh,
if you ever watched
interesting.
Atlanta,
No, I
but
haven't.
he has a very specific, depressed inner, like when he's playing like a sort of low energy, slightly sorrowful person that I think would work for BC. You would have to update the film, of course, because this is a book where definitely every single person in it is white, but like there are no black characters in this
But again,
book.
if we were doing this, if we were making this more like modern day.
Yeah. I cast Helene, and there was one person and one person only, Lohan. It's Lindsay Lohan plays
Oh, that's
Helene
a great cast. Yeah.
at the age she is now. Like
Current
that's,
Lindsay
yes,
Lohan.
I don't
Oh,
know what
that's
age
great.
Helene is supposed to be,
No,
but
I don't think we're given any indication.
In my mind, she is today. She's Lindsay Lohan today, whatever age Lindsay Lohan is. And then I cast the little goober who drives her to and from the abortion.
Yeah.
It's Bret Easton Ellis.
Yeah,
That's my casting for that, the guy who drives her there, who he doesn't even drive, he rides with her there and back. He makes her drive.
Nice. I like that. And I feel, oh, he'd be so happy to be in that role too, I'm
I
sure.
feel like that's him.
Yeah.
So all right, that's our casting. Do you want to do, you know who you look like?
Yes. All right. One more new segment.
What book does this book remind you of? Is what we do in this section that I didn't put a lot of thought to the title of, and called, you know who you look like? So less than zero, naturally. That one's like, if you enjoyed this, you probably like less than zero. Like they're
Yeah, no, they're like as we discussed, he's very clearly used this as a blueprint to layer his own story
yeah.
and his own sort of LA experience or what he wants to convey about LA over this novel.
I got a lot of Charles Bukowski, like kind of any of Charles Bukowski's like major works have this same short sentence, California, sun-drenched nihilism vibe that this book has. And they're all about depressing people going through depressing things depressingly.
That's a good call. I've not read a lot of Bukowski, but when you said that, I also was kind of picturing like the short sentences, the style of writing. I
Yeah.
can see.
Like it's not set in a, this is a glamour, this is a book set in a glamorous place where the like sorrow is kind of contrasted by the fact that they have everything, and all of Bukowski's stuff is depressing because everybody is poor and doesn't feel very good and can't go to a doctor. But just, I don't know, it's a very, they're very LA books, both of them, and stylistically they're similar. My other one is my year of rest and relaxation.
Yes, I that's I, that was one of mine as well, is also my year of rest and relaxation. And you know, I was looking
Less stylistically than subject matter.
I would say, yeah, I was gonna say more based on like that aspect of like nihilism. She's also somebody who feels lonely in the world. The hero the main well, I was gonna call her a heroine, but let's call her a main character is probably a better description. For my year of rest and relaxation, but again, she's also alone. You know, she's also alone in the world. She's also struggling to like connect and make connections. And
She's also an unlikable protagonist.
she's an unlikable protagonist. We
She's,
don't really get a lot out of her. She is maybe somebody that we do feel sorry for. Like
yeah.
I said with Mariah, where it's like, do I like this character? Like, no, but I have empathy for her.
I also
My
have, I have one
oh no, go
more.
ahead.
I have Jesus's Son by Dennis Johnson.
I'm not
It
familiar.
is also very short. It is also just stylistically, it is not. He doesn't write like Joan Didion, but his sentences, he was a reporter also, and his sentences have a sort of reporter's polish to them, I suppose. That like her, he is precise. But it's a book about depressed and sorrowful people. It is short. It is set in somewhere in the middle of the country. It's not set in Hollywood, but that's my other one, that if that books that I thought of while reading this book.
My other one was Valley of the Dolls.
Oh, yeah, I can see that Hollywood book.
Yeah, because we do visit Hollywood and Valley of the Dolls. The aspect of the drinking and the pills to kind of like wash away the loneliness, the isolation. And then again, similar relationships between men and women in the books that the men are all out there kind of like calling the shots and making decisions for these women. And it is a source of problem and unhappiness for those women. But they again are also Neely is somebody who constantly feels isolated and alone. And so does
And
Jen
also
and
doesn't really
Jennifer
take care of her children.
and is also not a great mother. Yep. And we see that in Jennifer North too. I think that as like that that lonely that aspect of loneliness. And again, these are women that have a lot of money.
Yes.
These are women that are we're told over and over again. Well, Neely is not ever really described as stunningly beautiful, but she's talented. She's decent looking. And she's famous, right? Like she's famous for what she does. She gets to do what she loves. She wants to be on stage. She gets to do what she loves. She makes a lot of money at it. She drinks and does drugs and loses it and comes back to it back and forth. And Wells should really not be such a sourpuss. Anne Wells has basically everything. She's
No,
like,
she was so frustrated in that
she's
book.
so
She
frustrating. We talked a lot about Anne Wells. But again, she is somebody who has everything. But she lets men, but again, like men are sort of dictating her life and a huge source of unhappiness for her. And Jennifer North, again, is also someone we see is like very beautiful. She ends up being very rich. But she's lonely. She's lonely. She's unloved. She's not really able to connect with anybody sort of outside of Anne. So those are the similarities. And then also there was, of course, the mention of the NIMBYtals and Seconals, and those are the same. Again, this was
out
considered
of
those like
out of date
housewife.
drugs,
Those like housewife drugs was kind of what those were considered like at the time. The
old timey drugs.
modern day Valium and Ambien.
All right, you want to do quotes?
Let's do quotes.
I only have two. Do you want to start?
No, you start.
Okay. Early in the book, Helene's single first person chapter in the beginning, she is talking about Mariah and she says, she never puts on any weight. You'll notice that's often true of selfish women. I don't know what that means, but it's a raw line. I thought it was cool.
I don't know
I
what that
just
means either, but it is a good line.
my other one is when, I don't know when, it's just she's at a party somewhere and she's just the scene kind of just opens. She's drunk and people are talking around her. And Felicia Goodwin says, "We're leaving now, Mariah. We'll drop you." And she's clearly very, very drunk. She's like, "I have my car. Thanks. I'm fine." Les, Felicia was talking over her shoulder. "I need you." Mariah picked up someone else's drink and smiled past Felicia at Les. "Crowd scene," she said. "Principles emerge." She's just so drunk, she's giving stage directions as like
Yeah.
these people crowd around her to like escort her. Where she's, it's implied that she's making some sort of scene
Right.
because she's so messed up. And I, crowd scene, she said, principles emerge. That got a laugh out of me.
That got a laugh out of me too. So something I one of the quotes I wanted to read, this is it's longish, but it's about driving. Because we talked about that a lot in Bredesen Ellis. And with Bredesen Ellis, it's very much like it's like Waze. Like it's just these like turn by turn directions. And I mean, it does have there is some like ambiance, I guess, to his driving. It's dark and it's at night and he's on Mulholland a little bit, but they're also just kind of turn by turn directions of like driving around LA. He's on
Because
Sepulveda Boulevard a lot.
even that's something that he took out of the driving though, that he took from this. Like that's how much he like looked to this novel, is that he's like, I should have him drive around and
I should
talk
have him
about
drive
driving
around.
because Mariah drives.
And that is also because Mariah drives, and that is also part of writing a book that takes place in LA. Just like there are certain things that go into writing about New York. There are certain things that are there, I think maybe just like this really integral part of like living in New York that is mentioned over and over again in books. And I find that driving is often that in books that take place in LA. There's often talk about driving. You spend a lot of time in your car in LA.
I guess so.
That's an LA thing, right? Their traffic is legendary beyond even New York's legendary traffic, but like that, and it's something that I know from people that I know from people that are from
No,
Southern
you're right.
California.
LA is also huge.
Exactly. It's
It's like a city,
enormous.
it's a city the size of like Delaware.
It's yes, exactly. It's really big. And so you spend a lot of that's the thing. You spend a lot of time in your car there. But I think her description, this description of driving, I think, is just like a really, I think it just kind of boils down Joan Didion's like style and writing. So the quote I picked, she's just talking about driving around LA, how she's just going out and driving and driving. So it says, she drove it as a riverman runs a river. Every day, more attuned to its currents, its deceptions, and just as a riverman feels the pull of the rapids and the lull between sleeping and waking, so Mariah lay at night in the still of Beverly Hills and saw the great signs soar overhead at 70 miles an hour. Normandy, 1/4, Vermont, 3/4, Harbor Freeway, 1. Again and again, she returned to an intricate stretch just south of the interchange where successful passage from the Hollywood onto the harbor required a diagonal move across four lanes of traffic. One afternoon, she finally did it without once braking or once losing the beat on the radio. She was exhilarated and that night slept dreamlessly. Because I think we're, like, why is she driving? And in LA, it is a challenging place to drive. And I think it gives her the, like, this sense of control, this sense of, this sense of freedom, the sense of connection. And then that moment of, like, there's this sweep where you get from, like, one, you get all the way across, right? In LA traffic, for that matter, without having to brake, and it goes in the rhythm of, it goes like along with the rhythm of the radio, because she's also kind of driving, listening to music.
No, you're right. It's her sense of control to be able to conquer the freeways of Southern California. The
Whereas
car that
again,
she
with Brett
drives.
Easton Ellis, it would be these, like, turn by turn directions and what the brand of the cars around
Yeah.
him, and what the people driving those cars were wearing and what they looked like and whether or not they were attractive.
The car that she drives is Joan Didion's car
Oh yeah,
at
there's
that
that
time.
picture of her in front of the,
Yeah.
there's like a really famous picture of her in front of
The
it.
yellow Corvette Stingray. Much like the car that Clay drives, I think is the car that Bret Easton Ellis drove at that point.
I
He
have one more.
really, really took stuff from this book.
He really took some things from this book, but I mean, he does at least. I mean, he talks about it. He doesn't pretend that he didn't.
He also made his own book out of it. I
Yeah.
don't feel like he I don't feel that he copied it outright and like didn't add anything. I think he like wrote a good book that is uniquely his also, but
Agreed.
the influence is large.
The last one I have is about her time when she's in Las Vegas. She began to crave the physical flash of walking in and out of places, the temperature shock, the hot wind blowing outside, the heavy frigid air inside. I don't know. I just really like that. I guess I just like that, just that description, because I think that's something that a lot of people are, that's something that a lot of people are familiar with. But I do think that's so specifically Las Vegas-y too, because, like, they're just known for that, like, intense desert heat, and then you go into this place that's, like, very opulent, right? And, like, very cold and very very refrigerator-esque, very air-conditioned, to kind of contrast, like, what's happening outside. And she's trying to feel things, essentially. And
Having
this
spent
is something that she's actually feeling.
quite a lot of time in Vegas, that is a very Vegas feeling anytime you go out and back in. All right, so would we recommend it?
Yes. I mean, especially if you, I think if you're curious about Joan Didion as a writer, not everybody enjoys essays or nonfiction. So, like, if you're somebody who's a reader and you definitely, you have a preference for fiction and you're curious about Didion, this is a really great place to, this is a really great place to start.
Yeah, highly recommend. All right. And next, we did Bret Easton Ellis' Influence, Played as It Lays. And next, we are going to move to one of his classmates at, not Bennington, one of his, oh no, one of his classmates at Bennington. Bennington's
Bennington is the actual college.
the real name of the college, Donna Tartt. And we are going to do The Secret History. So join us next time for that. As always, you can write to us at readingpopclassics@gmail.com. Rebecca, where can you follow us on Instagram?
At Reading Pop Classics.
All right. Thank you for listening, and we'll see you next time.